Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 75, and it is Championship Game Weekend, and the Steelers will not be playing, Dave. And it has been a busy start to the offseason for the Steelers, with the most important stuff or most obvious stuff being the coaching situations. And as you kind of pointed out, as long as a month ago, we did have a change at the offensive coordinator slot, and it is not a surprise who came in. But Todd Haley's out, Randy Feitner's in. I imagine from the work you've done and the obviously the talks we've had, you're a reasonably happy guy about this.
Yeah. Look, and shame on you for being late for today's walkthrough, David. We'll get into that.
Man, we will get into that. Oh my goodness!
Look, I can't have. Can't have that on my watch here now. I wrote way back in, 2012, when after Bruce Arians retired, that, you know, I named my top five candidates to be the successor to Bruce Arians at offensive coordinator. Randy Feitner, as many of our longtime listeners probably know, and I know you know, it's been a favorite of mine. I did a really in-depth study of what he did at the University of Memphis at the time, and so in-depth that I forgot half of it and had to go back and reread a lot of it as well, too. But Randy was my number one guy, and Todd Haley, just to jog your memory, was number five on my list. And, should this have been done, you know, 6 years ago? I mean, it's all water underneath the bridge now, but put it to you this way. Ben has his guy now. I think, in so many words, I think Mike Tomlin has his guy now, too, because he and Randy and Keith Butler go all the way back many, many moons ago. I think 1989 or 90 with Randy Feitner and Keith Butler, and I think around, I don't know, 98 or whatever it was with Tomlin there. So, look, you've got three guys in there that have worked together now a long time, and Mike Tomlin, Randy Feitner, and Keith Butler, and obviously over the years, Randy Feitner has been a good friend, buffer, confidant, whatever you want to call it, with Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, it's going to be interesting now, you know, when things don't go right, especially offensively, how Ben reacts, how Randy reacts, and all like that, because these guys have all worked together a long time. And yeah, in a word, I'm excited, but, you know, why shouldn't we be with the talent that the Steelers have on the offensive side of football right now?
Yeah, well said. And I'll tell you, the snippets that I get, and for those who are longtime listeners or follow my work when I was doing the radio show, is one of the things that I did that one of the biggest compliments I ever got and Dave got was Art Rooney told me the reason Art knew who I was originally is because the podcast was played on Steelers Nation Radio when Steelers Nation Radio was in its infancy. And he thought we did really good work. And it was our recaps, our coverage, our draft coverage. You know, this is five, 6 years ago when I was just getting started. And he actually made a point of asking somebody to have me come talk to him so he could tell me this. And, you know, when you're – I don't care what you're getting involved in. If you're trying something that's new and you get an endorsement from somebody who is as hooked in, nobody's more hooked in than him, right? And they say that about what you're doing. for Dave and I, it was, you know, it was as big a compliment as we could get in the early years when we were doing this. And it was great. And and as we went through this, one of the things I also had the opportunity to do was I would have in-depth segments with each of the Steeler coaches. And I felt privileged because I got access that not many other people got. And I got to talk to, you know, each one of these guys for 10 or 15 minutes. And I will tell you, you know, almost to a guy, every one of the guys I talked to, I enjoyed them. They were kind. They were polite. Needless to say, they know what they're talking about. And I learned stuff. And nobody more than Randy Feetner. I mean, I loved talking to him. I mean, there's one particular 15-minute chat where, you know, I'm holding a, I don't even know if I was holding an iPhone or what kind of recording device I'm holding. We're sitting there, we're having a conversation. Obviously, I want to be prepared. I want to try to impress him and, you know, tell him and show him that I know football. But way more importantly, I want to ask intelligent questions and hear what he has to say. We finish, and then we talk for 10 more minutes. And he invites me to, you know, come watch film with him in the offseason whenever I want. And, it wasn't the type of thing where anybody else in the Steeler organization wanted me in there watching film with Randy. But it was just incredibly kind. I loved talking to the guy. He knew exactly what he saw. It was just really fun. And I've always had a good feeling, wish he does well type of feeling about toward him because of that. And all the work that Dave did going back and looking at his Memphis stuff, I'm thrilled for the guy. I didn't think it was going to happen. I didn't think it needed to happen, but I'm certainly happy. I'm thrilled that he got the job. And I figured if Todd was out, he was going to be in.
Yeah, and now he's in, and the thing is, you know, we go back and I read my notes on his time at Memphis, and I know Alex went and did some tape study on that. You know, we don't – obviously that happened so long ago back at Memphis, and it's hard to project anything that Randy did at Memphis and say, well, this is going to be, a part of what he does, now as the OC and all. But I think you will see a lot of those things. Now, is there going to be, is there going to be drastic changes offensively, at least right from the get-go? Probably not. But I think you will see, you know, stuff like more false run keys, more false keys in the passing game, maybe some more switch route type of route designs and all like that. But rest assured, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is a different quarterback, right? I mean, he still can make plays after plays break down, and that's what's made Big Ben so great over the years. With that said, you know, there are several things. I guess it's time to kind of get into this, David. Ways and look, Todd Haley did a lot of good things in Pittsburgh, right? I mean,
yeah, I don't, you know, Todd, look, it's in my mind, it is very clear that Todd Haley is not the offensive coordinator for nothing that happened on the field. This is a relationship issue. I don't think you can expect – look, is he perfect? No, nobody's perfect. It's not going to work out perfectly. They didn't win six straight Super Bowls when he was offensive coordinator. Todd Haley's not the quarterback – because there was friction between he and Ben, as best I can tell. There was not a performance reason to fire Todd Haley, and certainly the second half of this season and the playoff game offensively were as good as the offense has worked ever for the Steelers. So this is a relationship thing, and as we talked about a couple times, it's fine. If you want to appease your starting quarterback, who's a star, who is the key figure on your team, that's okay. But in my mind, let's be clear about it. There's not a lot to complain about Todd, which is why you stay in-house and go with mostly the same system, is because it worked. So Randy knows exactly what's going on. He'll put his own, you know, he'll put his fingerprints on it a bit, change it a little bit, whatever. But they're not gonna. It's not gonna be a different offense going forward.
No, I don't think it is. You know, I think it will morph more into more of the things that Randy's ideas and you know that he wants to do and all like that. There'll be more of a collaboration overall, I think. You know, Todd Haley was probably, you know, my way type of guy with Ben. And look, you know, I said all along, starting back, 6 weeks or so ago, that you don't change just to change, and that if you are going to change, it's going to be a change that there's not a lot of, you know, having to acquaint yourself with a new guy, a new style of offense. You know, right now they've got such great talent on the offensive side of the ball that now you just need to take what you have, tweak it, and then go from there. And I think that's exactly that's exactly what Randy's going to do. We're going to see you know, Hank concepts still. We're going to see snag right. You know, a lot of these things really it's you know. You can go team by team and see a lot of the same stuff, you know, offensively. It's not like a lot of people are really reinventing the wheel at the college level. However, you could say some of
at the pro level.
At the pro level. You know, the kid over there in Los Angeles, obviously, really exciting offense over there. But then you have old guys like Sean Payton that's still doing some kind of innovative things. Now, well, Randy, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is don't expect huge changes right off the bit. But I think there will be little things that we'll be able to pick up on as time goes on, you know, with this. And
Dave, that goes back to the conversation we've had over the years and people who follow the game, which is interesting stuff, and it's off-season conversation, is innovation is very interesting in sports, where innovation comes from at different levels. And innovation in sports has for the NFL, it has come in football. It has come from the high school and college levels. And we're really what you've seen, and this is true if you go back over the last 30 years and look at things, what happened is you had some really smart guys in college who just said, look, I'm not going to get the 4- and 5-star guys. I'm getting the 1- and 2-star guys, and I can't compete with the power schools with the better athletes. How am I going to win? I got to out-scheme. So you invent the run and shoot. You, the high school guy who doesn't punt. You do different things. Gus Malzahn at Auburn was one of these guys coming out of high school. You got to figure out ways to do things. And what's interesting is, so it does. It moves its way up to the NFL, and whether it's the Wildcat or the run and shoot or these different concepts, they all start at the lower levels with guys trying to figure out how, you know, you don't have the better athletes, so what are you going to do? You got to teach them, you got to scheme them, and that's how you win. And then you get to the top level in the NFL where everybody has a high level of talent, and the X's and O's matter, but you got to figure it out.
Yeah, and the biggest thing I think is, look, you can have the best scheme in the world. If you don't have the personnel to run the scheme, then you're dead. You're dead in the water. However, if you the best thing an offensive coordinator can do is wrap a scheme around what his personnel can do best. Now, obviously, in a Steelers situation, they've got some great personnel, so it shouldn't be very hard to do that. So I think it is the right move with Randy. Nobody deserved it more than Randy, I don't think. And look, when you talk about things that this team needs to fix, and look, you know, you look at the rankings all like this. The Steelers were what? The average yards per drive were like fourth in the NFL this past year. You know, so they were moving the football,
sure.
You know, up and down the field. But yards looks good, you know, on the stat sheets. But scoring is obviously, you know, you win games by scoring more points than your opponents. And I think one of the main focal points. It'll be interesting to hear Art Rooney II when he sends up the bat signal here any day and talks to the media if he doesn't hit on this as well too. They have got to become a better team when it comes to red zone scoring. Last year, 2017. Now look, they had 60. The offense made 63 trips to the red zone during the 2017 regular season, and only 32 of them, which was 50.79%, ended in touchdowns. And those 63 red zone trips were the most Astito's offense has managed to register during a regular season since Roethlisberger's rookie season. Okay, so they were moving, and let's face it, they didn't get a lot of opportunities from the defense to start on the opposition.
No, they did not.
You know, and that's the world. I mean, we'll save that talk for another podcast during the offseason here. So they were moving the football. The thing is 50.79% red zone percentage was 22nd overall in the NFL. And
that's why Chris Boswell's in the Pro Bowl. It is. I mean, you know, he got a lot of chances.
Right. Now, while they did register a 75.86 goal-to-go touchdown percentage, I think that was something like 11th or 12th in the league, there's a disconnect between those number of attempts versus red zone attempts. So something's happened. And to be quite honest with you, let's be fair here, has Ben Roethlisberger ever been viewed as a great red zone quarterback?
No. I think that is fair. And, you know, people – look, Ben's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Ben's a great quarterback. There's some things he doesn't do as well as some other guys. And it's one of the interesting things that, you know, we've talked about for a long time. It's tougher in the red zone. You know, I think everybody understands that you're in condensed space. And there are different things going on. So is when you get in the red zone, are you getting goal-to-go situations? Does Le'Veon Bell's running style – is that less effective? I don't have the answer to this, but these are questions you ask about this particular team. Does the way he runs as a patient runner looking for things to develop, is that less effective in a tighter space when linebackers and defensive backs are closer to the line of scrimmage and doing different, you know, playing the game a little bit differently? I would think it's a little bit less effective. One of the things that we'll get into a little bit more here on this podcast is, Terrell Watson, the Steelers, you know, the Steelers have done different things over the past few years with their short yardage backs. You know, when D'Angelo Williams was with the team, when Bell missed some time and he was so effective when Bell was out, they wanted to have a role for him. So they made him, oddly, they made him the third down back, which, you know, you think about kind of poor decisions that Mike Tomlin's made. That was probably one of them. He's not a better receiver than Le'Veon Bell. He's not a power back, but they wanted to give him a chance to be involved. So they make him a third down back. They make Terrell Watson the third down back this year, short yardage back, not the third down back, the short yardage back. And the Steelers have not been the offensive line is not an offensive line that is at its best blowing guys off the ball. Pouncey is not what you hear every time any of the national guys are talking about Pouncey, and they're right, is he's a guy who can pull as a center. There are not many guys in the league who can get out front and do that stuff, and he's great at it. But at the same time, that athleticism, what doesn't come with that is bulk and size. And, you know, these guys are not – they do their best running. We all know the plays that they run well. You get DeCastro, you get Rosie Nix, you get Pouncey, whomever out front, and they run outside the tackles. We don't see them. And it was – you know, it came to roost in this game against Jacksonville. We don't see them effectively. And we can talk about the quarterback sneak forever. But they – you know, when you want to get a yard – there's no confidence that the Steelers are going to get a yard blowing guys off the ball. And so this red zone stuff and this goal to go stuff, and then Ben in the tight quarters of that area, you know, reading it, you know, it, yes, every, the incredibly long answer to your question is yes, they are. They need to be much better at that. They haven't been.
Yeah, 50.79% red zone percentage is the lowest it's been since 2010. oddly enough, they went.
Ironically, right?
Ironically enough, that's the year that they went to the Super Bowl, right? And they obviously had a more than decent defense at that time. The 50.79%, obviously the lowest red zone percentage since Haley has been the offensive coordinator, and the best red zone percentage since Ben has been the quarterback has been 60.71. That happened in 2015, and it happened back in 2005. So, boy, it sure would be nice to see it get, even if it got to 59, you know, 59, which is what it was in 2016. But you'd like to see that right around 60, you know, when it comes to a quarterback like Ben. Just think if it had been 60 this past year. You know, the biggest thing when you look at teams when you, like the New England Patriots, David, is how oftentimes early in games that they just jump on teams. You know, it just, you turn around and it's 14-0 and it's 14-3. And boy, what an advantage. And we saw Jacksonville this past week. What an advantage it gives to an offensive play caller when you, and what a disadvantage it puts the opposition at when you jump on teams. And when have we ever seen a Pittsburgh Steelers offense just jump on another team?
Not often enough. We've seen it, but you know we can go back and pick the times out. You know, Ben's two back-to-back 6-touchdown games, and you know, various times. But this is one of the things that I put on the staff a little bit. You know, we talk about, you know, putting the dagger, going for the jugular, use the cliche you want to use. There are not a lot of blowouts, not a lot of Steeler game blowouts. And you even go back to the Cowher era. This team, you know, what they were really great at in the Cowher era and going forward even is everybody knows the stats, which almost got blown this year, is when they had a 10-point lead in the second half, or you know they could just pound the rock and they were great at it and they would run it down. Some teams would, you know, still be throwing the football around and trying to make it a 3-touchdown lead, and it doesn't matter what you do at that point. And we saw that this year is, even though the Steelers were 13-3, there was a lot of discontent with how they won games. And you mentioned this, I think, on Wednesday, talking about, style points. Steelers don't have a lot. They haven't got a lot of style points. They didn't get a lot of style points this year in how they won games.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, as long as we've done this show, have we been able to award a lot of style points?
Not many. Not many.
In recap games. So, that, you know, I think red zone is going to be hugely important because I think, as we said, this offense, even as it is now, can move the football. It's just, man, you hate to either see them stall and kick a field. You know, it's kind of demoralizing when you control the football for most of the, you know, for first quarter half of the game, and you're leading 6-0. You know,
right.
And
right.
Or
14-10.
Right, right. Or because they go for two and miss it 9-3. You know, something along those lines. So, you know, red zone scoring, I think, is one of those first things that Randy and Ben and, you know, and the rest of the offensive staff have to get on. The second one, I've talked about Le'Veon Bell all season about, you know, his run success rates being down. And at first you want to try to blame that on him being rusty and this, that, and the other. Well, look, this team as a whole, and you hate to, you hate to look at a guy that rushed for what he rushed for, almost 1,300 yards, third in the NFL, and all. He played the most snaps of any running back in the league. He had the most carries of any running back in the league. You hate to look at that and say, well, yeah, but there was some disappointments in there, but there were. I mean, just look at this team on first down runs this year alone. Bell was given the football a whopping 183 times on first and 10. Okay, and that amounted to 57% of his total carries. He had his 3.86 yards per carry average ranked very poorly when compared to the 17 other running backs around the league that registered 120 or more carries on that down and distance. And rankings aside, you know, we always like to use 45%. On first down as being, you know, if it's first and 10, you want 4.5 yards on that down to qualify as a successful run. Well, Bell's successful run rate on first and 10 was just 31.1%. And when you compare that to the other 38 NFL running backs who had 74 or more first down carries during the regular season, 24 of those backs had a better success rate than Bell. Bell registered. And here's the other thing. On top of the poor successful run rate that Bell had on first and 10 carries, 43.2%, okay, of his 183 total carries gained just 2 yards or less. All right, so, you know, what's 43.2% time of 183?
About 70.
Okay, that's how many times the Steelers were facing second and 8 or longer. That's, you know, I don't care what who your quarterback is. That's that really puts you behind the chains in a hurry. Okay, so they're good. You know, now is this all? You know, and over and just Bell's successful running rate as a whole really dropped down from last year. Now, was this drop off from 2017 a result of defenses finally catching up with Bell's patient running style? Was it poor play calling? Was it poor offensive line blocking? Or was it all the above? You know, whatever it was, they need to get back to be able to run the football a lot better than they ran this past season.
Yeah, look, we talk about average yards per carry is not necessarily exactly what you want to be looking at to determine the effectiveness of a running back. But if you're going to carry it 300 times over the course of the season, it's a decent barometer to tell you something. And the past 2 years, Le'Veon Bell averaged 4.9 yards a carry. That's a monstrously big number. And this season, he averaged 3.9 yards a carry. And it's a significant difference, and it's something that I tweeted out yesterday about the offensive line, and this, you know, we'll kind of segue here into a couple other topics. And so we've talked about Randy and we've talked about Todd, and one of the things is Mike Munchak, again, an incredibly pleasant guy to talk to, very incredibly knowledgeable, as all these guys are. I don't need to keep saying that. He's the offensive line coach, and as you go down you go down the position coaching tree, Mike Munchak is universally loved, and you know gets kudos all over the place. But let's ask the question: this offensive line, where you have three guys starting in the Pro Bowl for whatever you think that's worth, you have a first team all pro, you have a consensus, all pro caliber player in Pouncey. And then, you know, you talk about people love to say how Marcus Gilbert gets screwed every year by not being in the Pro Bowl. And then you have Ramon Foster, who might've been, you know, who was as good however you want to couch that, it was very good at left guard. You have this offensive line, which by many accounts, not necessarily our account, but many accounts, is a really high pedigree offensive line. And tell me the times they blow guys off the ball, that they were able to just, you know, pound at guys. Now, style, you do want to adapt to the type of guys you have, and we know when they were effective running the football. But I don't know, if you just want to look at the Steeler run game, look, this is the pass blocking of the offensive line and the changes of Todd Haley and Ben getting hit. That's all been a very positive thing. That's the one side of it. The run game, we need a yard. Let's get a yard. You know, we can criticize all day long Todd calling the toss sweep or, you know, throwing the football. And we did. But at the same time, if you hand the ball to Le'Veon Bell and go behind Pouncey and DeCastro, that hasn't been something that they have consistently been able to do. And I again, just like you asked on the last question, is that on the offensive line? Is that on Le'Veon Bell's run style? I mean, you've got a passing game that's a weaponized passing game that should make the run game even more effective. Is it on the offensive line coach? Is it on the offensive coordinator? I'm not quite sure, but if you would think in football, one of the things about football is there's a time when you say, look, we need a yard. We can get a yard. Our guys are going to beat their guys at the line of scrimmage. And the Steelers have not been able to do that for a while now with what is perceived to be a really talented offensive line.
You know, the funny thing is you get on Twitter or whatnot and you talk about how Ben Roth under Todd Haley, the sacks have gone really down, you know, way down and all like that. What's the first throwback you get when you mention sacks went down, during the Todd Haley regime? What's the first response you normally get? Well, it's because Mike.
Of course, Mike Munchak. He gets all the credit. That's my point. Yeah, Mike Munchak gets all the credit for you know the good offensive line stuff.
Okay, who gets to blame when the running game?
Todd Haley. Todd Haley gets all the blame for not being able to get a yard.
All right, now people are going to take this as us all of a sudden throwing Mike Munchak underneath the bus.
No, but I am putting Mike Munchak in this conversation look, again, I like the guy. The Steelers couldn't be happier and better off than having Mike Munchak. But, man, he is absolved for whatever reason because nobody goes down to that level. It's just we know who he is because he's a former head coach and he's in the Hall of Fame. But he is absolved of any responsibility.
Right. Now, look, I don't think either one of us would trade Mike Munchak for any other offensive line coach in the NFL right now.
Maybe not any position coach.
Probably not. You know, but if you know, some of them, like I wrote at the end of the article, is it Bell's, you know, there's some level of Mike Munchak responsibility in the running.
Yeah, it's a team thing and they're all to blame. And you know, look, if you ask me, and I bet, you know, I'll ask you can comment on it, but if the Steelers had a 4th-and-1 play tomorrow, you know, to win the Super Bowl and you had your choice of doing exactly what you wanted to do, I damn well might want to have a healthy James Conner running the football than a Le'Veon Bell. You know, it's just we saw how James Conner attacked the line of scrimmage. Not that Le'Veon Bell can't do it, but it's not what he does as well. He does a lot of things really well, but, you know, maybe they missed the whole boat and it should have been James Conner doing that in that role.
Boy, D'Angelo Williams sure was good at it, wasn't he?
Yep.
Do you remember back to that? I don't know what just triggered this. Remember that win against San Diego on Monday Night Football a couple years ago where they essentially...
Dumbest call in history that Mike gets credit for because they won and they let 15 seconds run off the clock because the clock guy screwed up? And I do remember, apparently.
Do you remember the play, you know, the putting the ball in Bell?
Yeah.
Do you remember holding your breath? On that play?
They tried to run between the tackles and he got bounced. You know, he got bounced at the 2-yard line. See ya. You're done.
I mean, that very well, EEO, if not for that great effort, that very well could have been, you want to talk about a fire Mike Tomlin moment, maybe. You know, that was it.
So, a lot of people probably don't remember this particular play, but it's one of those where I was apoplectic the next day talking about this. The Steelers win the game, and everybody's like, dude, what's your problem? They won the football game. And that's exactly why you talk about these things, because it was a disaster that worked out, because, you know, they screwed the clock up. The guys who work at the stadium screwed the clock up and the team didn't notice. And, you know, kind of that's a major problem. And then Le'Veon Bell makes a great effort at the end of the game. And because he had made a great effort and scored a touchdown on a play that didn't work, the play didn't work at all the way it was supposed to work. But because he scored a touchdown, everybody's like, they won the game. Who cares? Well, you know, there you go.
All right. Well, we have, unfortunately, a lot of months to talk about what this offense needs to fix and how they might go about fixing it between, you know, I think obviously run game and red zone efficiency are two of those. Now, about that guy, Bell, you want to talk about him now?
I do. Let's get the Munchak stuff out of the way here. Dave, I just found it very odd. I do not think, again, no, there's things that we state as, you know, more factual or more opinion. This is obviously straight opinion. I'm just very surprised. First of all, a little bit surprised Mike Munchak got interviewed as a head coach for the Arizona Cardinals. He's 57. You know, I don't know what you know. He had, you know, he was a head coach in with the Oilers/Titans organization because he came through that and he got promoted from offensive line coach to head coach. That's an unusual thing. He's never been a coordinator in his career. It's just, I don't know why somebody, maybe Bruce Arians said, you know, you should go talk to Mike Munchak. I know the guy personally, and he's the guy you should interview. I don't know what stands out about Mike Munchak that would, at this point in his career, that people would want to interview him. They did interview him, and apparently he was on the short list to have a second interview. And he declined. He withdrew from this. Now, guys withdraw from coaching situations, and it's usually because they're told they're no longer in it, and it's a nice public way for them to not be embarrassed. It's all silly, the way they do that, particularly in college. In this situation, it did not appear. It appeared Mike Munchak was still part of the conversation, and he withdrew from the coaching search and actually released a statement through the Steelers, which, again, also unusual. That it wasn't the right time for his family. I don't really get it, to be honest with you, Dave. And I don't think it has anything to do with Todd Haley. Everybody wanted to put it with, well, Haley left, so he wants to stick around. It's an odd situation. I don't really get it.
Yeah, I mean, did Munchak and Haley just not get along either? You know,
I don't think that was it. There was never any suggestion of that. I never heard anybody talk about it. The guys are around the team every day. I mean, he wouldn't, but even if they didn't get along, he's still not, you don't stay to be an offensive line coach if you can go be a head coach somewhere. I mean, I just assume that what he said wasn't the right time for his family was the right answer, but you would assume maybe you don't have the first interview if that's the case. It's I don't have a good answer to this. Just odd situation to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, Le'Veon Bell. My God. So when Dave and I got on the air this morning, we chatted for a second before this, and I had not seen Ed Bouchette's article that came out early this morning, you know, 8 o'clock this morning. Go ahead, Dave. You recap it and fire away, and I'll add in.
Yeah, in so many words, according to Ed Bouchette this morning, Le'Veon Bell showed up. Here's what it says. Not only did Le'Veon – reports say he missed most of Saturday's walkthrough before the divisional loss to Jacksonville Jaguars, and he also showed up late to the game the next day. Quote from Ed Bouchette, not only did Bell arrive much later than that for the playoff game against Jacksonville, as well as one coach, he missed practically the entire Saturday walkthrough the day before, showing up about 5 minutes before practice ended.
I have to tell you, that just blows my mind. And I do not. Let's be clear. There's two points to this. One is I Le'Veon Bell doesn't need to be at Saturday's walkthrough to make him play better against the Jags. I assume he knows at this point. He knows exactly, you know, the plays and everything that's going on. It is such a disrespectful move to your coaching staff and to your teammates. It's, I mean, it is Man, if you did that in high school, you don't play the next day. If you do it in college, you don't play the next day. You know, the Steelers, obviously, in a playoff game, aren't going to sit a guy down. But, I mean, this is stuff that if it's Eli Rogers or Martavis Bryant, you don't play the next day. And if it's even if it's Jacksonville, you don't, you know, a playoff game, you don't play the next day. You're not going to sit your star running back down the next day. But my goodness, Dave, I don't know if, you know, particularly, again, I didn't care. I say I don't care about any of this stuff, and I generally don't because I don't think it impacts what's going on the field. This is mind-blowing to me that he this Saturday stuff. Like, whether you get there 2 hours before, an hour and 20 minutes before, I generally don't care, you know, whatever. But you don't show up to the Saturday walkthrough? I mean, this changes to some degree how I view about franchising the guy. It is just, that's just not acceptable stuff. And all the stuff that I give a pass on for Mike Tomlin that fans and love to complain about, that I say it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. Well, they're right on this one. This it blows my mind. I'm kind of speechless about it.
I understand that some, you know, some players are going to get have preferential treatment over, you know, rookies, undrafted, you know, bottom of the end roster guys on like that. But and I think we sort of hit on the topic on the show the other day about maybe more accountability or whatnot. And look, I think there's a couple of players like David DeCastro and Villanueva, and, you know, maybe some guys on the defensive side of the ball that that want more accountability. And we kind of talked about it, you know, how much of it lays on Tomlin, how much of it lays on veterans and all like that. But you can't have things like this. You can't just have guys doing their own thing. You know, especially, geez, you know, right before a playoff game. I mean, you know, obviously that's, you know, that's not why they lost the game. They got their butt kicked. But it's just one more thing. And especially when it comes to Le'Veon Bell, it's just one more thing. Now, obviously, we don't know. Did he have a flat tire 2 days in a row? You know,
I'm gonna not give him the benefit of the doubt here, that because if that was the case, I think Ed would have written that. I think there would be an answer is he had a flat tire, so he showed up late. I do not think that that's the case.
Right.
I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt.
And I don't either, but I'd hate for, you know,
Right. We'll all understand that if there were circumstances that we currently don't know about, okay, then we'll reevaluate.
Yeah, we'll offer retractions on the podcast.
as we often do.
I'm not
very good at saying I was wrong, so you're better than I am at that, but
I'm not used to doing that kind of stuff at all.
Fonzie.
Boy, I wonder how many heads that one just went over. Sit on it, David Todd. Boy, we got it all on this show, don't we? Pop culture, one guy that can't speak or write. Geez. Okay. It is unreal. It really is now.
Does it change your view at all of how to approach? So I guess two questions that we're guessing on. One is, do you think Le'Veon Bell was trying to get making a statement don't franchise me? Is that going through his head? And two, does it change your approach to the offseason, what you do with him?
Boy, you know what? Larry Fitzgerald never has had a problem getting paid, has he?
Nope.
And that, you want to talk about a model guy right there. Heath Miller never had a problem getting paid, right?
Troy. I mean, you know, you can
handle your business side of things, you know, without becoming a spectacle. You know, if do you talking on the field between the white lines? That's, and look, I'll never be accused of being a perfect human, never. But man, some of these guys you just want. And look, I mean, it's not, Le'Veon's been in the league a couple of years, right? I mean, you can maybe see this, you know, maybe a year or two ago. But after all he's been through, geez, you know, does it change my look? As much as we bashed on him on the running game, that guy still can make plays out in the open field, right? I mean, would I sign him to a long-term deal right now, David, with the wear and tear and all that he's got on him, and the guaranteed money and the fungibility of the running back position and the worry about him getting injuries and all like that? No. Would I still tag him and then just literally run the mess out of him and throw him on the scrap heap next year? Yes. Yes, I would. So he needs a talking to. And you think people are going to be complaining now, today, when this story comes out? Wait until, if they do franchise him and we get a repeat offseason of what happened last year with him not being around the team until after training camp. They're going to be some mad folks. I guess what we both need to ask ourselves, and people listening to this podcast, you know, is what he's able to do on the field worth all the other stuff?
I thought all the other stuff was meaningless. This is way less meaningless. It's, you know, if you all the talk, I don't care about. When you have team obligations, those you got to be there for. You got to be there for your team obligations, and not being there for, you know, a team obligation the day before a playoff game, man, that's just. I'm curious. I'm curious when this story, obviously, it just broke, at least to Ed. But, you know, some of the frustration that DeCastro vented after the game, or some other guys maybe have mentioned, where I was like, well, you know, that doesn't matter. It changes my view. It changes my view on some of this stuff. If they were, without calling Le'Veon Bell out, essentially calling Le'Veon Bell out, saying, you know, this stuff is tiresome and bothersome that it happens, because, hey, you know, you're David DeCastro, you're blocking for this guy, you're dependent on this guy, you expect this guy to be there at practice on Saturday. It blows my mind that he wasn't there.
There's no I in team, right?
Yeah. Oof.
There's no I. Yeah. There must be an I in Bell. So yeah, that ought.
There's definitely a me. There's a me in team.
Yeah, there is. Backwards me, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, look. I mean, they'll have to make the decision pretty quick on him here, and during the off season as to whether or not to get. The thing is, I mean, look, they can win a Super Bowl without Le'Veon Bell. You obviously would like to have Le'Veon Bell, but if you don't franchise him, is James Conner and whoever enough? You know, or are you going to have to spend an early round draft pick whoever you can get, you know, with that sort of player? Look, Alvin, if those type of players, the Bells, the Freemans, and Alvin Kamara is probably a perfect example. You can still find those guys, right? But you got to get them probably in the early rounds there. But there's nothing like having a running back that can stay in on all three downs, can run both inside and outside, and then catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, so we'll see. I think I'd still tag him, though. I'd tag him. I'd run wheels off. I'd get whatever I can out of him one more season and then shake his hand, send him on his way. We'll see if the Steelers. And look, it's not going to be cheap. And as we talked, I mean, you think he wanted whatever 15 plus million last year, David? He turned down what, 30 million over two, 42 million over three. What the heck is he going to want this year with a franchise tag of 14.54 million? I cannot right now, as we sit here today, fathom them giving him a long-term deal that averages 17 million a season. I just can't do it.
Yeah, it's not happening. I mean, Shady's going to make what, 8.5 next year and be the highest paid. You know, he's going to make more than Freeman's making in Atlanta. He's the highest paid back. And it just goes back to the question that I asked before, if whether it's Stephen Ridley and James Conner, whether it's Gio Bernard and James Conner, for some number, you know, around a combined $4, $3, $2 million, Are you going to get 70%, 80%, 90% of what you got with Le'Veon Bell? Because look, let's just be straight up about this. Le'Veon Bell, we've now decided that Le'Veon Bell's great unique trait is his ability as a pass catching back. But you know, we saw Todd Gurley do it this year. We saw Alvin Kamara do it this year. I don't doubt that he's a great pass catching back. He is a great pass catching back, but he is not. He's never been a home run hitter in the ground game. And for yards per carry go from 4.9 to 3.9. Again, who are you going to blame? Well, some of it's on the back. I don't know. This actually really bothers me. This stuff with Bell, and I guess I'm leaning back now the other way, 49-51 about not tagging him and moving forward, because damn, they get enough BS going on in that organization. They don't need that. I don't know.
Yeah, we're waving.
I'm annoyed.
We're waving at each other. I just recently, I think at one point a few months ago, I said I'm not so sure I'd tag him, and then just recently I came around and said, okay, I'd probably tag him. And now you're going the other way.
Yeah, I'm going the other way. Right,
We're waving at each other.
Ships passing in the night.
Yeah, and we'll see. You can make good arguments either way for franchise tagging them and not franchise tagging them right now. So, all right. What direction shall we go in now? You want to talk about cap or?
No, let's bang out the games this weekend and save some of that stuff for Monday. But
the thing is, this franchise tag, tracking it in real time is tough. So this thing couldn't move. Let's just hit the high points real quick on some of this franchise tag stuff here, and that's the fact that the Steelers are over the cap right now. Let me pull up my numbers here real quick here for you. A little over 4 million, during the off season, you work underneath the rule of 51 number, which takes into account the top 51 cap hits on your roster. And up until really yesterday, they had exactly 51 guys under contract for 2018. And when you take in to account the current cap rollover that they have on the books with the NFLPA from 2017, and you factor that on into everything, right now where they're at, they are over $4.897 million according to my calculations here, and that's just working off of the rule of 51 of what's under contract. And now when you start looking ahead, $14.54 million franchise tag for Le'Veon Bell. You consider Boswell Chicklow, Eli Rogers, Jordan Perry, Roosevelt Nix, B.J. Finney, and Matt Filer are all going to likely receive tenders. Obviously, the last two, Finney and Matt Filer, are exclusive rights tenders. The other six are going to be restricted tenders of some level, you would think. When you get all that in there, when you get in the other offseason workout bonuses, the draft pick displacement cost, the practice squad cost, the 52nd, 53rd players, the $3.5 million in available cap room for in season, all these are future cost down the road, you have the Steelers looking at $36.2 million over $170 million salary cap. Now, obviously, that's not the real number there. I try to always give you a real look of what we're looking at now, which is almost $5 million over the cap, and a long term, if all these costs were to hit right now, what it would be. So, in the long and short of it is, there is going to be a lot of off-season business movement really, really quick here in the coming, 8 weeks or so. We talked the other day, David, you didn't think maybe that it's going to happen. Roethlisberger contract extension. If he commits to the organization that he wants to play 3 or 4 more years, I think there's a good chance that you'll see that contract extension and very, very soon. And if they do something along that, along some of the figures that I've played with, they could save roughly $7 million in cap space with that alone. You're absolutely going to see a contract restructure for Stephon Tuitt here in the very near future that can save as much as $8.1 million, almost $8.2 million. And I think you're also going to see an Antonio Brown contract restructure. And if they do that to the full allotted amount, that's going to save them almost $10 million in cap space. You have two other guys in David DeCastro and Alejandro Villanueva that you could clear together a combined like $8.6 million in salary cap space. You can cut J.J. Wilcox right away, clear $3.125 million. If you decide to move on from Mike Mitchell right away, which, you know, there's some debate as to whether you know, I know half the people listening to this podcast, more than half, probably want him gone, but you don't have anybody behind him right now, quite honestly. $5 million in cap space there, and if you were to cut guys like Cody Sensabaugh, William Gay, and Darius Heyward-Bey, you can clear combined, you know, roughly about $4.35 million. So, there, you know, people will look at them being $5 million over now. They'll look at them being potentially the 30-whatever million over, you know, $36.2 million over long-term down the road. The fact of the matter, like every other year, it's not as bad as it looks. They'll be able to get – now, obviously, is restructuring a ton of contracts the thing that you absolutely look forward to the organization doing? No. But if you can get 3 or 4 of them done, as long as you have the franchise quarterback playing well and under contract, it's just part of the sins. Obviously, the eight-whatever million cap hit on Ryan Shazier is going to be tough, but you know, I've talked to several agents, and there's no way around it. They're going to be on the hook for that $8.7 million fifth-year option that they picked up there. But the fact of the matter is, look for Tuitt Brown to be restructured right away, maybe even David DeCastro and Alejandro Villanueva, and don't be surprised Ben Roethlisberger signs a contract extension, and then as soon as the team gets back from the NFL Combine, that's when you're going to see 3 or 4 guys, I think, jettisoned in salary cap casualties.
All right, good stuff. And as always, the work Dave does on this is as good, you know. He does it as well as anybody on the cap stuff, and I sit and listen and learn from it as well. So excellent. The Ben stuff, you know, he talked about, you know, there was he told his teammates versus what he told publicly, what he said. We'll see. They can work around his numbers. I would be surprised if he commits to an extension, but you know, they can figure all that stuff out because, you know, again, I think he's going to be the quarterback for a long time. So okay. This Bell stuff still blows my mind. This weekend. What happens this weekend?
The Steelers won't be playing.
Steelers won't be playing in New England. And by the way, I had a nice invitation to sit in a box. The box of all boxes next to Robert Kraft to be at the AFC Championship game. Which was extended to me a couple weeks ago, which I have now declined because I'm not going to go up there. I was all set to enjoy that in the comforts of a luxury to watch the very excited to watch that game up there. But it will now be the Jags and the Pats, Dave, at 3:05 in Foxborough. Everybody knows the Tom Brady, blah blah blah. He hurt his thumb. Pats are favored by 7.5. What are your thoughts on this?
I tell you, you know me, I love defense, David. I would love somebody to knock the Patriots out too, or not win the Super Bowl. So I can keep running with that adjusted net yards per passing attempt. You know, the defensive stat that I like to run with as well too. I saw a stat yesterday on the NFL Network, and I can't remember it verbatim. But it's something like seven out of the last eight times, I think the top-rated offense met the top-rated defense in a championship game. I don't, you know, either a playoff game or a championship game that the defensive team has won. Okay. Now, obviously, Jacksonville is your top-rated defense, and New England, you know, top-rated offense there. Tom Brady banged up adds another level of intrigue to it. But, man, I just can't help that Bill Belichick's going to be able to do what the Steelers weren't able to do, and that's take away that running game and make Blake Bortles throw the football early and from behind as well too. Now, do I think the Jaguars defense can cause the Patriots offense some problems? Yes, I do. But regardless, I think if you make Jacksonville, if you get them behind and you get Blake Bortles having to make plays to beat a team like New England in Foxborough, I think it's an impossible task. Now, the line opened at 9, I believe, and I think you're showing 7.5 right now.
Yep, 7.5.
I just don't see the Patriots not covering that, David. I just don't, you know, if we're talking 9, maybe, but I just, you know, maybe a little bit lower scoring game. Because of the defense, and say what you will, the Patriots defense got off to a horrible start this year, but boy, they sure did come around during the second half of the season there. And I know Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers were able to move the football against them and all, and I know some other teams have as well, but that Jacksonville offense just is not those other. You know, they're not playing the Steelers defense this week, and so thus I think New England wins this, and I think New England covers the 7.5.
Yep, I'm with you. 27-13. I think I think the Pats do as well, and we'll see about this Jags defense. They got smoked, and you know it's probably because of everything, how the game went down. It is the under talked about aspect of what happened is. This vaunted Jags defense got smoked by the Steelers. We'll see if they can shut down the Pats and Brady and Gronk.
I'll go 25-13. How's that?
All right. Vikes go to Philadelphia with the opportunity to then go back home and play in the Super Bowl. It's a great story. People, we talked about it. Steelers beat this team in week 2, 26-9. It was the craziest ending that you'll see in a game. They get the win at home. What a great scene. Nick Foles got a nice playoff win, so he's got that going for him. They're at home. They're a dog again at home for the second week in a row. Dave, I'm going to root for the Vikes. I'm going to take the Vikes. I think Case Keenum's good enough. People keep expecting him to revert to Case Keenum, but we're in week 20 or whatever we are of the NFL season. So low scoring game, good game, tight game. Give me the Vikes right on the number, but I'll take the Vikes to cover. But Vikes 24-21.
No, you're showing 3 as a number, right?
I am showing 3. I'll take the Vikings, but I'll predict a score that's right on the number.
All right. I think when you look at both of these rosters top to bottom and to figure out, because both of them have good defenses, right? I mean, both of them really, really do have good defenses. But I think when you look at them top to bottom, which one right now is the most talented top to bottom? I think it's the Vikings. And I think that's because of what they have on the offensive side of the football. Nick Foles, great story. Probably if you put Foles and Keenum together, you probably a coin flip there. But you got guys like Stephon Diggs and Thielen and Adam Thielen and Kyle Rudolph, the tight. I just think all the way around, the Vikings are the better team, and I think that will eventually prevail in this one. I'm with you too. I think this is a bit of a lower scoring game. I will go Vikings 20, Eagles 16, but I do think the Vikings win this one and cover.
All right. Well, no Steelers. We'll be back on Monday to talk about those and get into the draft stuff. We'll talk about Kuiper's mock and where the Steelers are going and all those good things. But we got the Super Bowl, but we're getting into the dark side.
Absolutely, and we didn't mention obviously that Mike Tomlin evidently decided no changes on the defensive side of the football there. I kind of thought maybe a guy like Porter, might be jettisoned, but that's not going to be the case this time around. It doesn't look like. Looks like really, and Richard Mann retired. We knew that was coming as well too, but they sure are going to miss him. And it sounds like Hines Ward will be the guy to succeed him. But of course, nothing is official on that right now. So in the meantime, I guess until Monday, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you would like to donate to the cause. Dave, we're still in the top 50 on Stitcher. We're even ahead of what's the ESPN First Take. We're ahead of First Take and Colin Coward's podcast and a few others there. So
good work to all our listeners.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, make sure you go to Stitcher and listen through that app if you're not not already doing so. In the meantime, if you'd like what we do and want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button upper navigational bar. And enjoy your football weekend. And I'll talk to you on Monday, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.